Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome again to another edition of DK Podcast Gaming. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad.
And we welcome you to 2022. We hope that the year is treating you super, super well because you deserve it, being a listener of the Geek Cave Podcast. If you are new, welcome. We don't have a lot to explain. Other than that, the show kind of explains itself. And we would love for you to join us on social media. More on that at the end of the segment. First, we want to thank our sponsors, Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today. With free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or something in between, or you're like us and you love all of those things, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. And Gamefly, your destination for new and used video games with membership options for every budget. Plus, their store carries these wonderful things called Lego products. Don't step on them. And some of the most popular arcade one-up cabinets. Don't step on them. Gamefly has thousands of titles that you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the postage paid envelope for a new one, or keep it forever and pay a lot less than those in-store prices. And the only thing you don't get when you decide to keep the game is the cellophane that wrapped the game. Everything else that came with it in the store, they will ship to you. Any download codes, the case, all of that stuff. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at deepcavepodcast.com.
Darren, I need to stop you for a second.
Okay.
I know you told people not to step on Legos.
Right.
Or the Arcade One cabinets, and you're just trying to be safety conscious. But we don't kink shame here. If somebody
wants...
Yeah. That in their life, they are allowed to do it.
All right. The DK Podcast and its advertisers are not liable for any injuries you may happen to sustain while doing that. But, of course, it is a free country, and we do not kink shame here, so you do what you want to do.
Thank you.
There.
So long as it doesn't hurt others.
Exactly, yes.
So long as it doesn't hurt others, yes.
Consent is always...
sexy.
Yes, consent is always sexy.
Yes. Chad.
Sexy, sexy Lego.
Yeah, what's up?
I consent to you telling me what you've been playing right now.
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Demo Derby.
So I've been scouting around for demos, and I found one. And when I say I mean my spouse. And when I say one, what I mean is two, but I'm only going to review one.
And by review, he means...
And by review, I mean, I'm going to talk about it a bit. And so I played the demo of this game, and it's based on some obscure anime about a bunch of people and the fights that they have. You probably never heard of it, but the game is called Dragon Ball Z Kakarot.
And that's an anime?
Well, the game is called Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, and it seems to be based on some anime... I'm guessing called Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z. Anyway.
It's not ringing any bells.
So anyway, the demo begins with your character, someone named Goku, surfing on a cloud with a green dude named Piccolo.
And like the instrument?
I tell you, man, anime is weird.
Maybe it's because he's green like a pickle.
Oh.
Oh, so yeah?
Pickle. Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are on their way to intercept some guy named Raditz, who has kidnapped Goku's son, Gohan. I know this is a whole lot of names that I just threw at you, but this game seems to expect that anyone playing it either already knows this anime or these are names that it slowly introduces over the first three levels of the game. All right, here's the skinny. Maybe the game's good. I don't know. I didn't like the demo. I mean, it's stylish. The action's smooth. The buttons, I guess, do what they're supposed to do. But the whole thing felt messy and yet somehow shallow. I fought the same three bad guys 8 times in the half hour I played. That is a lot of times to fight the same three portal turrets and the little angry hate box that shot me with lasers from off the screen. The fight with Raditz is hard, but probably only because the game starts me on level 4. And maybe they're trying to get me in on the good action of the game, but what they've actually told me is that the opening of the game sucks, and they don't have any confidence in it. Then again, after Googling it, maybe the first level of the game is just some narrator saying, "Last game of Dragon Ball Z." And then there's 2 levels of shouting, because that's what there seemed to be an awful lot of as I was doing some research on this stuff. Anyway, I digress. Is it a good demo? It's pretty, but I didn't really like playing it. The battles in the air are dizzying, and it's hard to keep track of all the stuff going on. But if you are into frenetic combat in that kind of game, and you enjoy a whole bunch of boring side quests, like going fishing and eating, then this might be the game for you. But I'm thinking that this is a game that was made for fans of the anime series, so I'm landing on not even the demo.
It's weird that such an obscure show would get a game.
I am confused, but I am often in the state of confusion.
I see what you're saying.
Ah!
See, folks, it's a joke. We know what Dragon Ball Z is. We were pulling a funny on you.
Yeah, unfortunately, the internet is sometimes the world of literal, so we gotta make sure people know. Yeah,
I have a very literal child at home, so after I mess with him, I gotta go, "Hey, I was joking."
Yeah, yeah.
At least in this, you don't get to go Saiyan in the demo. You don't get to go Super Saiyan in the demo. You just get to
be.
Yeah, you get to be Goku, and you get to fight Raditz.
I don't like that.
Well, as someone who played maybe 3/4 of the game when it initially launched, yeah, it's like a 6 or 7 out of 10.
Mm.
It's competent, especially if you're a huge fan of the show. Yeah, it's fine. If you're not, I don't think this will sway anybody.
That was the distinct impression I got, was that this is meant for fans.
Yeah, it's meant for super fans.
And it is stylish. I mean, it,
oh, it looks
up,
great.
I mean,
it looks great.
It looks good. It sounds good. You know, I just, the camera whips around so fast, it's like they put it on the inside of a centrifuge.
Ooh.
As it spins around the battle.
It does move a lot.
So
yeah, it does move a lot.
What works really well in the anime does not work really well in the game.
I would say that's a fair assessment.
Yikes.
But that's what I got.
Okay, cool. Justin.
Yo.
You been doing any Reddit browsing lately?
Well, thank you for asking. As many of you know, I'm not a huge gamer, but I do have a wide breadth of knowledge that I think is useful to the gaming community. So I've been going through Reddit's Ask Games to find questions that I think need answering in a little segment I like to call
Ask Justin. The Geek Cave podcast and its associates, including Justin, do not condone the advice given in this segment.
Thank you, Nigel. So this month's question is, what game desperately needs more servers? Well, Cooking Mama, Diner Dash, honestly, the food service industry in general. The best way to get more servers is to pay them better and for the customers to just treat them like humans. Just because they're serving you at a restaurant doesn't mean they're your servant. They're trying to do a job, and you just need to pull your head out of your ass. Karen.
You know, that's fair. When I was working food service, if you want good tips, you work Friday, Saturday night. If you piss off the manager, you work Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
Sad but true.
Yeah. No, it is sad but true, and that was very astute, Justin. Thank you.
I try to be very woke these days.
Yeah. That was good. That was...
for a guy whose last name is White, I try to be very woke.
Well,
for a guy who is so white, his last name is White.
I am.
Outside in the snow naked, and you'd lose me. It's like, why do you think my beard grows in red? It's the only way people can find me if I stand against a blank wall.
There's Ginger, and then there's Justin.
It's not Ginger, it's Justin.
It's like, no, Mom, we got Ginger at home, and it's just Justin.
The Ginger at home.
Yeah. All right. I've got a few reviews. I've been busy over the month of December, but before we get to those,
you order Ginger off Wish.com and I show up.
Yeah. Before we get to those, speaking of ordering things online, fun fact about me is that I am apparently very good at procuring hard to find items. As in, I managed to somehow procure both a PlayStation 5 for Chad and a PlayStation 5 for Justin, despite the fact that I don't have bots, nor am I a scalper, because I sold these to these gentlemen at face value, which is what a human being would do. Shark Boy 69.
And we can all verify that Darren is human, because before every taping, he has to pick the pictures that have the light stop sign in it.
Yeah. The overpass one was difficult, but I still managed to pull it out. So
yeah. So he's verified. He's human.
Verified human. That should be, ooh, if we ever do a Deep Cave merch, that should be a t-shirt. Verified human. Yeah.
I like it.
Verified human. All right. Somebody in the Discord, write that down, because I'm not going to. Anyway, I've had a PS5 for a little over a year. You guys have had PS5s for at least approximately 2 weeks. Chad's had one for longer, but Justin, he received his around Christmas time, not as a Christmas gift, but as a, do you got the money? Yeah, do you got the stuff kind of thing.
Yeah, that's, he pulled up. I'm like, hey, you got the stuff? You got the money? You got
that
the
is
stuff?
Literally,
you got the money?
Yeah, that is literally how that exchange went down.
And I didn't hit send on the PayPal app until he pulled it out of his trunk. I'm like, all right, click.
Yeah. It wasn't in a back alley. It was like outside of a farmhouse, but it still counts.
In the middle of nowhere, so it still kind of had a sketchy vibe to it.
Yeah, we still...
That makes sense. I've known you guys a long time.
And that's not a skit for the show. That is actually how it happened. But anyway.
We're friends.
Well, you didn't want to get mugged. Yeah,
that's true. So
yeah, Lori scares me. I had to make sure I had the money if he had the goods.
She'll take an eye without even hesitating. So now that y'all have had your PS5s and I've had mine for a while, and I know that it's difficult for people to find them, I figured we could give everyone a bit of an impression of what it's like. What are the pros? What are the cons, if there are any? So I'll save mine for last because I've had it the longest and I might have a little bit more insight. But we'll go with the noob. Justin, you've had your PS5 a little over a week. How's it been going?
The little that I've gotten to play it, because I have a job and a child and, you know, I don't get a Christmas break like my son does. So I haven't been able to just play, but the few times I've gotten to play it, I've really enjoyed it.
Okay.
The first game that I got for it was Spider-Man Miles Morales. So I've been swinging through New York City. I really like the controls.
Yeah.
I played through Astro's Playground, the game that came with the PlayStation. It's a PlayStation controller. I do like the adaptive trigger.
Yeah.
Mechanism. The only downside I'm seeing to the PlayStation 5 so far is I've had my PS3 for like 11 years. Because I got it just prior to my son being born. And so I'm used to when you hit the home button, it's supposed to do a certain thing. It does it differently on the PS5. So I'm just like, why is it not? Okay, it's this way now.
Yeah. Well,
it's
the
just getting used to the newness of it because I skipped an entire generation.
Well, and the thing is, the PS4 home button acted a lot like the PS3 home button. So it's even more of a throw off for those who kept up. So, okay, cool. But otherwise, it's working fine.
Yeah, otherwise it's working great. I've downloaded a few games, haven't played them yet because I'm still working my way through Spider-Man Miles Morales. But yeah, so far it's great. I actually we pulled in a separate table from another room and set it next to the TV, and that's what it lives on.
It's large
because there's no room on the TV stand.
It is on the scale of big boy. It is an out loud he coming.
Yeah, it's a chonker.
Yeah,
just like me.
All right, great. Chad, what about you?
So I will echo the sentiments of the main menu and the PS button.
It's just weird.
Those are frustrating to me. I am also frustrated by the microphone button on the controller.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
That the light is off unless the microphone is off. You know, because if you don't want to have the microphone on, if you don't want it to be constantly listening all the time, you can turn it off. But then you've got this bright orange light.
Ooh.
That just is there.
Yeah, it's a mute light. Yeah.
And I don't like it. I would rather have the light on when the microphone is on. On equals on.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Now, that's me. And that's just, I understand that different ways of doing things. First game I played, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart. Made for the PS5. Absolutely gobsmackingly gorgeous. Beautiful game. Ridiculously beautiful game. Great playing game. Uses all those haptic feedback things and the adaptive triggers. It would be my pick for first game of the PS5. Like, if you get your hands on a PS5, get that one first. Yes, you can play the little Bobble Boy.
Astro's
Playground. You know, yeah, you can play that and it'll give you the control schemes and kind of how they work. Rift Apart. Straight up.
Okay.
Amazing. Then I put in a PS4 game to test its upscaling. Horizon Zero Dawn. Oh my God.
Yeah.
60 frames a second. You know, upscaled to 4K and you get all of the stuff. It runs so smooth. Still takes a little while to load, which is surprising to me.
Yeah, some of the PS4 games don't quite take advantage of that SSD like they should.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, in terms of doing something pretty well right, I haven't put God of War in yet because I'm waiting just another couple of, you know, another month or so when the next God of War game is supposed to come out and I'll replay,
yeah,
you know, the God of War. But from what I understand, that game took advantage of every single bit of the PS5. To make it just perfect.
To show how much of an influence you are in my life,
mm-hmm.
I signed up for a PlayStation Plus account and was scrolling through, and you get, you know, a new game every month that you can download. One of the choices was God of War, and I flipped over. It's like, God of War!
Yeah.
Like, that was my, you know, visceral response.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the neat things about the PS5 is you get the PS Plus collection. If you sign up for PlayStation Plus, it's like a dozen of the best PS4 games. God of War is one of them. Right there is worth it.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
But I will say that the 60 frames per second has got to be the best upgrade. I get the 4K. I understand the HDR. I get it. They're beautiful. Having the game run that smoothly is a revelation.
Yeah.
Being able to say, oh, no, no, no. I want there to be no stuttering at all. And then you got a screen full of bad guys and robot dinosaurs and things going on, and it still runs at 60 frames a second. My biggest gripe, and it's not about the PS5, it's about From Software. And I put in Bloodborne, and they decided to lock Bloodborne at 30. Even on the PS5, and it's just like, you guys messed up.
Yeah.
Because it would have elevated an already elevated game.
Yeah.
Maybe I think the world's not ready for that kind of awesome.
It might not be. I'm sure there's another From Software game coming.
I'm sure there is. Bloodborne also on the PlayStation Plus collection, if anyone's interested. So, cool. I haven't had too many negative experiences with the PS5. I recently upgraded the storage since they allowed for expansions. So I got an SSD internal hard drive for cheap. And so I upgraded the storage because the storage is, it, even though it's a terabyte of storage, it goes real fast.
Horizon Zero Dawn is supposed to have like a 50 gig or 60 gig install.
Yeah, for Horizon 2.
Yeah, Horizon 2.
Forbidden
West.
Yeah,
I downloaded Arkham Knight and it had like a 40-some gig.
Yeah.
So and that's that without goes, the extras. Mm-hmm.
That goes pretty quickly. Now, if you're running PS4 games on it, you can just use any old USB 3.0 external hard drive. But I went ahead and I upgraded the SSD inside because I like how fast some of these things load, especially if they're optimized. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'll echo what Chad says. The 60 frames per second is just night and day. I played a little bit of the first Horizon because Horizon Forbidden West is next month. And I wanted to kind of refamiliarize myself with it. And oh my gosh, buttery smooth. I don't know if I would say there is a must have, a killer app for the PS5 as of yet. Rift Apart's very good. I would also highly recommend Kena, Bridge of Spirits, if you have not seen or played that yet. We did a video on the Deep Cave Twitch. It's now on our YouTube channel because Twitch only allows us to hold videos for a certain amount of time up there. But it's on our YouTube channel and so beautiful. Chad can attest to this.
Oh, yeah.
It's just Pixar quality now, as now far as visuals.
Now that we're past Christmas and I can start buying games again, you know, Kena's on my list. Also thinking about going back into Ghost of Tsushima with mm-hmm. the PS5 edition rather than the rather than getting the PS4 and counting on the upgrade, like getting one that's already optimized on the disc.
Well, the PS5 one comes with like an extra, some extra DLC story content, I believe, like a separate island that you can explore, that kind of thing. So, and Ghost of Tsushima is another recommended one. If you've not played it on the PS4, at least grab that version because it'll be a little bit cheaper. And oh my God, it's a good game.
It's a very good game.
Especially if you like samurai stuff, because there's a filter where you can make it look like the old black and white samurai films, complete with film grain and everything.
Yeah, nice. The Kurosawa filter.
Nice.
Yeah, it is highly recommended. So
you don't
yeah,
play
I would...
the whole game that way, but like you decide, okay, I'm going to do this mission this way.
Okay.
Because it's still really good, yeah.
It's really good, but it's really hard on the eyes.
I bet, yeah.
To watch like the little tracking lines that will kind of go up. You know, not all the time, just every once in a while, because you know, it's this old film grain thing.
Yeah. But whenever there's certain scenarios where you're put in a one-on-one duel and they use the same camera techniques, and then you've got that filter on, and it is just chef's kiss, you know. And we could talk day and night about that. But yeah, I would say that I'm... As someone who has a Series S as well as a PS5, while I do spend a lot more time on the Series S because of Game Pass and stuff like that, as far as exclusives go, Sony still blows Microsoft out of the water when it comes to the sheer amount of exclusives they have and the quality of their exclusives. So absolutely a PS5 is worth getting. I don't know if there's a killer app for it yet, but after Horizon 2 and God of War Ragnarok are on it, there will be at least two killer apps that you will absolutely want to pick up for it when you get a chance. And Miles Morales is a great game as well. And
I'm enjoying it.
That's 60 frames per second because some games like Miles Morales and Spider-Man and a few others have options where you can either play exclusively in 60 frames per second or you can do a high performance where some of the... Because 60 frames per second, you might lose a bit of the ray tracing and the other visual hullabaloo. But the Spider-Man ones, at least, they've got an option where you can have a hybrid. You get 60 frames per second, plus you get some of the ray tracing and some of the other advanced visuals. And that's a nice kind of balance. So, yeah, PS5's worth it. Don't buy it from a scalper. They're starting to show up in retail locations, physical retail locations in my area, which means nature is healing. And then eventually you will be able to pick up one and you won't have to help some idiot buy a new sports car. So... That's good.
Or you could just ask Darren and he'll.
Yeah. Yeah, you could ask me and I will make that arrangement. Maybe I won't charge you more than retail price. I might charge you for shipping, but that's about it.
Cool. Wait, did you charge me for shipping?
No.
Oh, friends discount.
No, because
nice.
I literally handed it to you. No, if...
I didn't know. I mean, you drove it from Indiana. I didn't know if you.
No, if someone on the
do I owe you gas money?
No, no. But if someone on the Discord wants me to help them track one down, yeah, I'll do that. I might charge you shipping, but that's about it. All right. Well, Cool. So I guess it's time for reviews and eventually the pile of shame. But first, like I said, this past December was a busy month for me. I managed to sneak in a couple of games, even though we were doing holiday stuff and we were being super safe. We are always here at the podcast. We always take the biggest safety precautions. So the six of us couldn't be together for Christmas due to work and all that other stuff. I saw Justin in passing just to, you know, hand off.
Literally, he pulled up. We made the exchange and they drove off.
Yeah. But hopefully we can all be together very soon. 2021 is going to be left in the dust. 2022 is going to be a great year. So to start off, I played the biggest, arguably, AAA release of 2021. Let's talk about Halo Infinite, which released on the PC and Microsoft consoles. Full disclosure, I'm a huge Halo fan. Have been since the first game came out on the OG Xbox. And Halo Infinite is exactly what the Xbox brand needed at the end of 2021. PlayStation has been eating their lunch sales-wise, and they needed a big, popular franchise to return and remind us all what made Microsoft's gaming division so popular among non-PC gamers in the first place. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Power On. It's a free documentary on YouTube that looks at how the Xbox brand started and how they got to where they are now. It pulls no punches. It's produced by them, but they own up to a lot of their mistakes. There's even an episode dedicated to the Red Ring of Death. So check it out. It's free. It's, I think, 6 episodes on YouTube, and it's really well done. All right. That being said, though, there will be spoilers in this review. So just skip ahead if you want to stay pure. Only know that, yes, you should definitely play this game if you like Halo, science fiction, or first-person shooters. All right, everyone's still here? Cool. Halo Infinite fixes a problem left over from Halos 4 and 5 in that fan-favorite holographic AI companion Cortana, who, in this universe, when AIs reach the end of their software life, they go a little crazy. And by a little crazy, I mean genocidal. It's called rampancy. In an effort to fix her rampancy, she in Halo 5 kind of ended up commanding a giant robot army and was hell-bent on taking over the universe. It looked like they were setting up for a direct war with Cortana, so I recently played Halo 5 to remind myself of that, and I was ready, and here we go, and we start Halo Infinite off. 6 months later, the war is over, and almost everyone is dead. Okay, you want an explanation? Yeah, I did too. I did eventually get one, slowly, and over the course of the entire campaign. You meet another AI companion, you stop another potential cataclysm, you find out that, Cortana also died, somehow redeeming herself, and, you know, you find out how. And, you also find that the Halo franchise nicely benefits from a soft reboot of sorts. Master Chief has shown a bit more personality and vulnerability, but still feels like a complete badass to play as. So, story-wise, without spoiling too much other than what I've already said, do they accomplish what they needed to do, which was fix the shit that happened in Halo 5? Yes. Yes, they do. They fixed it. What happened to a bunch of the characters that you met in Halo 5, including the guy you played the majority of the game as, which is what led to a lot of Halo 5's criticism? Spartan Locke? Don't know, but he's probably dead, because every other Spartan seems to be. Turns out that this new enemy group called the Banished are highly competent, and I found that out playing on normal difficulty, which is not normally a problem for me. I died a shit ton of a lot of times. So, the Banished are very good at their job, which leads me to the gameplay. It's a good thing that this game is fun, and holy balls, is it fun? Because I did die quite a bit, both in multiplayer, which is not a surprise, and single player, which was a surprise. Everything has the appropriate feel, especially considering you're playing as a 7-foot-tall super soldier. In addition to the always solid gunplay, the game is now it's kind of open world. Think Far Cry or things like that. There are outposts for you to capture, secrets for you to find. One hilarious one was I found this cave where I found an upgrade for my armor. and a bunch of dead human soldiers and banished soldiers all gathered around an arcade cabinet. So they had a rager before they all met their end. So that was neat, I guess. It's also made far better by not only that change to open world, but also the addition of a grappling hook that the chief can use anytime he wants. You can use it for traversal. You can use it to attack enemies. You can use it to grab weapons that are all the way across the screen. Let's say you ran out of bullets and there's a gun laying there. You just yank it over. You can also use it to grab onto vehicles that are causing you a bit of problem and kick the driver off the vehicle, and now you have the vehicle, that kind of thing. Basically, I felt like a terrifying, gun-toting Spider-Man as I just, you know, wiped out everyone who so much as looked at me funny while saying, Master Chief, shooting this guy in the face. And, yeah, it was... It was fun, but it was also funny. If you don't want to play the game, just look up some of the quips that you'll hear during combat, because before, it was just the grunts, the low-level enemies that would kind of yell at you and talk to you while you're fighting them in prior Halos. In this one, everybody talks. And sometimes the enemies sound kind of indignant that you, how dare you, you know, attack me. Other times, it's just great. Two of my favorite times. One, was a little grunt pulls out a grenade. I shoot him in the hand and the grenade drops at his feet and he yells, "Oh no!" right before he blows up. That was good. Another was I used the sniper rifle to take out an alien from afar, shot him in the head, and I heard another one scream, and this is a direct quote, "Oh no, he shot him in the head. We need our heads to live." Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. Now, there were a couple low points. Toward the end of the game, I felt like I should have made it to the final boss at least three different times before actually doing so. It's like they give you this big climactic feel of a battle, and then you're like, all right, cool. Oh, there's another one. You know, that kind of thing. You start to run out of time to rest, and I guess that's to ramp up. But the actual final boss was kind of easy compared to everything I'd encountered before then. Some of the bosses will, however, murder you pretty quickly, especially the first couple of times.
Their job,
it is their job, but it feels a little unfair. Whenever you die, you spawn right in front of them, and oh, he's still got that big ass hammer. I'm dead. I spawn. Oh, look, there's the big ass hammer. Yeah, it's to teach you to think strategically, which is not something Halo players normally do. Normally, Halo players are like, I have a shield, and so I can take a few shots. No, move. Move, damn it, you know? The good news is the load times weren't so bad, so I didn't have to wait too long after I died. Thanks to the magic of Game Pass, I played this on both PC and my Series S. Interesting fact, my gaming PC, the game ran a little bit, it was a little bit prettier, a little bit smoother. It's a little bit beefier than the Series S. They both have SSD drives. The Series S loaded faster. So, I don't know. They're both fine. And due to cloud saves, my progression carried over between one and the other. So, nice. That was a nice touch. The multiplayer suite at launch was missing some key features, such as a standalone team deathmatch mode. It's called Slayer, as well as some issues with character progression. The good news is those have all been patched out. And the soundtrack is amazing. It's probably the best soundtrack of the franchise, which is saying something. They nailed it. So is Halo Infinite perfect? No, but it's pretty darn close. And if you've got Game Pass, which is $14.99 a month, it's like a dollar for the first 3 months. It is an absolute steal because it's available on Game Pass at launch. Otherwise, if you want to shell out the full price for it, I still think it's worth it. It is really good. And especially if you're a longtime fan who you might have lapsed after what I thought was a decent game, but still disappointing in Halo 5, this one definitely gets a play it from me.
Cool.
All right. I also played Assault on Dragon Keep. If you are familiar with Borderlands or Borderlands 2, this is a spin-off that recently re-released on the Epic Games Store on PC to kind of help promote the upcoming Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. And picture a first-person shooter, but Dungeons and Dragons, and randomized loot. And That's kind of what you're getting. It's the Dungeons and Dragons campaign is called Bunkers and Badasses. You use a variety of guns as opposed to medieval weaponry, but some of your quote-unquote grenades are things like magic missile and lightning bolt and fireball and stuff that D&D nerds will be very, very familiar with.
Nice.
The humor the series is known for is still intact. At one point, you end up in an empty room after killing a boss with one shot, and the DM goes, "Shit, I didn't think you'd get this far." Then a dragon appears, and then the walls just give way, and a dragon shows up, you know. So, got some great humor. Tina is voiced wonderfully by Ashley Birch, who has done a lot of video game voice acting. She's also the voice of Aloy in Horizon, so she's got a lot of great range there. And if you're a fan of shooters, or if you have at least a passing interest in D&D, and you like weird humor, again, this game gets to play it. Hmm. All right. I've been trying to put this off, but I can't anymore. Let's do this. Kent?
It was created by a madman. Ignored and rejected. Every week it grows. We cannot kill it, for it does not live. Step fast and be wary, or you may fall victim to Darren's Pile of Shame.
So, for those of you new to the show, the welcome. Pile of Shame... Yeah, welcome. The Pile of Shame review is... Essentially, every month I take a look at my growing pile of games that I either bought and have never played, thank you Steam sales, or played quite a while back and always intended to revisit. 2022 is what I'm calling a bones year, as in it's a year to do good things and have a good time. So this year I am looking back at the best games that I own. Otherwise, this is known as the Year of the Games of the Year. I'm specifically looking at games that have won Game of the Year awards. Because, damn it, it's my podcast, and I want to have fun for a change. Because usually these Pile of Shame games are not a good time, and I want to have a good time. So why not start with a game heralded by many as being one of the greatest games of all time? Well, I'll tell you, because sometimes that opinion changes, and it is painful.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. But Uncharted 2 was so good.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not talking about Uncharted 2.
Uh-oh.
I am talking about the winner of the 1999 Interactive Achievement Awards Game of the Year.
GoldenEye?
The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Or...
Hold on, Darren. Hold on. Mm. Just a second. I'm gonna interrupt you for just a second.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Y'all, this is an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You feel free to... Feel free to mad tweet us all you want.
It's an opinion.
But remember, one, it's an opinion. And two, we don't truck with abusive behavior.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So Ocarina of Time, or Ocarina of Tim, if you prefer.
Okra of Time.
Oh, yeah. Okra of Time, spelled T-H-Y-M-E. That was also on my notes.
Yes.
Guys, this used to be my favorite Zelda game. In fact, if you had asked me before last month, what I think the greatest game of all time was, this would be in that discussion.
Mm.
But that was last month.
Oh no!
Oh boy!
What did you play it on?
I played it on the GameCube.
Okay.
Which was the first re-release. They have since re-released this on the Nintendo 64 app on the Switch, which I don't recommend you use because apparently that was not a good port. They re-released it on the 3DS, which I actually think is the best version of that game. More on that in a minute. But I didn't have an N64 available to me. I do have the GameCube available to me, so that's what I played it on. Some of our listeners, especially Paul on our Discord. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
Started planting seeds of doubt when I mentioned that this was my next Pile of Shame review. And in fact, if you join the Discord, you'll find out ahead of time some details like that. But God, yeah, I think it's just okay now. All right. First of all, we know the story. A tree with Kent Harris's mustache tells a fairy to find the laziest kid in the forest. He proceeds to huh and hah all over Hyrule, collecting 3 MacGuffins because a preteen princess told him he needed them to unlock a door to the Grand MacGuffin, the Triforce, Sacred Realm this time. Anyway, you do that. You get the Master Sword. You find out that the sword is rated M for mature, so you take a nap until you're 17. Then you find out that the big bad, a guy named Ganondorf, who is the only man from an all-woman race, do the math on that, has taken over the world and just ruined everything. You track down a few magical sages that just so happen to be the people you met when you were a kid. Crazy how that happens. Mm. You use time travel to solve some pretty dope puzzles. Face off against Ganondorf, and then Ganon the Giant Pig, and then make an escape from the most metal-looking castle ever. Zelda sends you back to the past, creating a timeline split that is still debated amongst Zelda lore hardcores to this very day. Roll credits. Belated spoiler warning on a game that is almost 30 years old. So that's all well and good. It's not really anything Zelda hasn't done before or since. And for its day, it was a pretty epic tale. The use of time travel to not only set up your own puzzle solutions in some cases, but also explore just how tragic things could get if bad people got to be in charge is still pretty solid. And I do absolutely love a lot of these characters, especially the little nods to Mario and Luigi in the guys that run the ranch. And that creepy mask merchant who got a much bigger role in the game's much more divisive sequel. By the way, when you do encounter the Mario analog, use the camera to zoom in. His bolo tie is Bowser. So that's neat.
Hmm.
Speaking of looking at things visually, yeah. This game's not much to look at now. But consider the time period. This came after Mario 64 showed us what we could do with platformers in the three-dimensional space, albeit in a super ugly way. This one did it with adventure titles in a slightly better looking way. In my opinion, much better. But whether or not it looked as good as stuff on other consoles is up for debate. However, I will say that if you decide to play this game for the first time, find the 3DS version. If visuals are super important to you. Because, this one has a case of before the makeover in a teen romance comedy. Now, the gameplay, I actually am one of the psychopaths who enjoyed the Nintendo 64 controller. Maybe we'll do a week 3 podcast on that one.
Yeah, okay, I'll make a note.
Yeah. This game feels like it was made for it, with all of the pluses and minuses that go with it. Having to constantly readjust your camera angle with a shoulder button, despite Mario 64 already setting a precedent to use those 4 little yellow C buttons, is weird. Especially weirder when you play on a GameCube controller because you want to use the right stick, but no, the right stick doesn't do that. Gotta keep hitting that shoulder button. Oh, you fell off the ledge because of our terrible camera controls? Well, sucks to be you, kid. Climb that ladder and get back up there. Combat has a decent feel. I love the music-based mechanics the titular wind instrument brings to the table. I also love the fact that you are first given an ocarina from your childhood friend, and you will cherish it forever. That is, until that preteen princess gives you hers, and then you chuck the other one like it was a bad habit, and it's never spoken of again. Link, you player. But this game struggles.
Excuse me.
This game struggles with a bit of
Don't hate the game. Hate the
This game really does struggle. Well, I kind of half hate the game because it struggles with a bit of not enough to do when I'm not doing something. And what I mean by that is if I'm in a dungeon or other enclosed space, it's fine. It's good. I know what I'm doing. It's good. But if I'm out in the open world, like Hyrule Field, there's a lot of nothing out there. There's some trees, but most of the time I'm just walking, or rolling, because that's a faster means of travel. In fact, I'm pretty sure the reason the developers included Epona, that's the horse, is they realized that it takes forever to cross the map. That might be by design, because the game has day and night cycles, which take about 8 minutes each. But man, I would have liked when there was something to do other than ride the horse, shoot the occasional ghost with an arrow, foot race a mailman while wearing bunny ears. Actually, that last part's kind of fun. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the dungeons. Many of them are designed well. You know, it is a Zelda game, just the right amount of difficulty. And then there's the water temple.
Yeah.
It's the one thing that was fixed in the re-release.
Yeah, it was fixed in the re-release, but I didn't play the re-release.
No, no, you didn't.
You know it. I know it. There's no escaping it. The water temple is a terrible torture device that caused a lot of us as kids to realize this is what purgatory's like, isn't it? you know, you got to put on your heavy boots, raise the water, take them off, lower the water, backtrack, raise the water again, then lower it. Pray to God you did it right. Get mad because you didn't do it right. Eventually, you have a cool mini-boss fight with Dark Link, who I have decided is the manifestation of your hopes and dreams to get out of this stupid temple. And so on and so forth. Nintendo even realizes how badly they screwed up, because as Chad mentioned, the 3DS version does fix that. Audio-wise, the soundtrack is gorgeous, even today. Brings some of my all-time favorite Zelda songs. There's a reason that I... Yeah, there's a reason I went out and I found the CD that Nintendo published when they re-released this on 3DS. So I guess overall the question is, despite my grousing, does the game hold up now when compared to when it came out in the late 90s? God, no! But is it still worth playing? Yeah. Yeah. Some of the luster might finally be rubbing off after we got a lot of fantastic Zelda games since then. We got Wind Waker. We got Breath of the Wild. We got the remake of Link's Awakening. We got A Link Between Worlds, and on and on and on.
Wind Waker's my favorite.
Wind Waker's really darn good.
Replace the field with an empty ocean. I mean, you still have the same problem, right? Nothing to do in between.
But it's still somehow more interesting. Yeah. But it's somehow more interesting. But more importantly, I think, is the truth that this game changed the way we play action-adventure games. You can see the inspiration it provided to developers to this day. If we didn't have Ocarina of Time, would we have gotten Darksiders? Would we have gotten, you know, stuff like that? It's hard to say, but I don't think that they would have felt as good because of the road that Ocarina of Time paved. So while it's not my favorite Zelda game anymore, I do think it's still one of the most important games to come out in the past 30 years, even if it's not necessarily one of the best. So, should you play it? For the historical perspective, yes.
Okay.
So there you go. That's a hard one to start off on. Hopefully next month is better.
Probably not.
Yeah. It depends. Is he going to bookend it so like he did 1996?
99.
Maybe he jumps now and does 2021's Game of the Year and just replays, you know, Miles Morales or whatever.
The
2021.
I don't want to spoil it, but the next game only came out a few years after Ocarina of Time.
Okay.
So, Majora's Mask. All right. It is not Majora's Mask.
Least favorite Zelda game.
It is not Majora's Mask. I know there's staunch defenders of it out there, but I hate that game so much. So
it was my least favorite of the ones that I played.
It's pretty low on my ranking. But anyway, big thank you again to our sponsors, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly. We want to invite you to join us on social media, Facebook.com/DeepCave, Twitter @DeepCavePodcast. You can also follow Justin and Chad @WatchWhatPod on Twitter. You can join our Discord. You can find the link to that. The invite link is at DeepCavePodcast.com, right at the top of the page. And oh, by the way, DeepCavePodcast.com. We got a lot of great stuff on there as well. And don't forget about our other shows. You Want Me to Watch What? Which is Chad and Justin's movie review podcast, and week 3, which is Justin and I basically talking about whatever the hell we want to talk about. And the occasional
That's accurate.
and the occasional TLDR. You can also find us on Twitch, twitch.tv/DeepTavePodcast, or DeepTavePodcast2, the number 2, because sometimes Chad plays. And also, you can find our shows on YouTube, which are Deep Cave Plays and Retromantics. Boy, it's almost like we are everywhere, because we're also on every podcast service, every major one, including now Good Pods. So thanks a lot for listening. Be sure to download the comic episode if you missed it. Be sure to download the movie episode tomorrow. And remember, everyone's a geek for something.